The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the Chi?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down! Walk right up to
the sun. A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes May 10th. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto renews. Restrictions apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving non-stop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
For Inside Carolina, I'm Taylor Viplis, and I appreciate you taking out time from your day to listen or watch the podcast we're putting out. We have a special one today. You don't have to get your eyes checked. That's recruiting expert Don Callahan for the first time on a podcast. Callahan and Viplis collaboration. Don, how are you feeling for today?
I am super excited. For those who don't know, I've been begging to be on your podcast for like 2 years now. I don't know if it was your fear of Ross or if I had to buy you lunch in order to get on here, but something you either overcame that fear or you really liked the barbecue we had when I was in Charlotte.
That was good barbecue when you were down here at Providence Day. I'm at Providence Day too. But besides that, how's the summer of Scoops been going?
It's been good. You know, it's kind of an interesting calendar, the way that the recruiting calendar has kind of, I guess, filled out with, you know, June being just full of visits, July and August, a lot of decisions. And it seems like, you know, beginning of July, there was a ton of decisions and it has kind of slowed down a little bit. And we still have a few more decisions left for the rest of August. And then we'll head into the season, really, with a couple of spots UNC is looking to fill.
I'm glad you mentioned the Ross aspect, too. I wanted to get back to that. I know you have a ton of time committed between Inside Carolina. You got dad duties. You got husband duties. But in your free time, do you watch any trash TV shows?
Trash TV shows.
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Unfortunately.
What shows are you watching?
Oh, man. So I'll do some of the reality stuff. I'm like old school, you know, MTV, Real World, The okay. Challenge sort of thing. A big Challenge fan.
Bananas guy.
I am. I'm more of a West guy,
you know,
just, but yeah, I mean, you gotta respect Bananas, and CT. The other show that's really trash is the Married at First Sight that mostly my wife enjoys, but we kind of sort of like to watch. But yeah, so are you a trash TV guy?
The reason I asked that is because I've started watching Love Island, the UK show.
Uh-huh.
And
is Ross on there?
No, but the premise is they bring in islanders and you have to pair up, and the goal is to be the strongest couple left. And every so often, like when you're already paired, they bring in new islanders to try to get people's heads to turn and try to split some couples off. And I know the reason why I brought this up in the world of podcasting.
Is this what's happening here?
This is what's happening.
You're trying to tempt me?
No. In the world of podcasting, you and Ross are strong.
Oh.
But now Adam Smith is getting brought into the
equation. So you're going that angle. Okay.
Ross's best friend Adam Smith joins Inside Carolina, and I'm looking out for you. I don't want all your eggs to be in the Ross basket.
So you invited me on here because you felt like Ross was distracted.
Ross,
and it would make it easier.
Yeah. Ross is turning his head, and this is your reminder when you look around that you do have other options.
Okay.
If you want in the world of Inside Carolina.
All right. That's good. I'll keep that in mind for sure.
But before the season gets started, I thought it would be fun to take a trip down memory lane We're going to hand out some superlatives from Don's time covering recruiting for Inside Carolina. We did something similar with Rel, and I think that was the starting point of your petition to get on the podcast. And the subscribers and the listeners always love anytime we get people on for recruiting. I told Rel, anytime somebody asks me any question about recruiting, like, oh, if I'm walking out the street and somebody's like, Vip, are we going to get this recruit? I'm like, ask Don, ask Rel. I have all my information is coming strictly from them. So I guess to get started, when did you get started with recruiting and how long have you been doing it?
So I've been doing it almost 20 years now. And I started it while I was in college. It all kind of started with, I developed a website, nchsfootball.com, and which actually was surprisingly successful considering, you know, my resources and my time. I was a college student. Through that, I met Miller Seyfried. And for those who have, are longtime Inside Carolina or Tar Pit subscribers, they know the name Miller Seyfried. Miller started up AC Preps, and he was like 100 times more successful than I was. He used that to get a job at what was then the Insiders. And the Insiders eventually came scout.com. But while he was at the Insiders, we kind of still communicated and obviously crossed paths a bunch at different events. I, in a funny story that I don't think I've ever revealed before. So I'm doing this part-time with this website. I'm a college student. I'm also working at Kohl's, the department store. Okay. And I get fired. So no income whatsoever. My girlfriend at the time was freaking out because obviously we had rent to pay and all that. And so I'm applying different places. And so I happened to reach out to Miller and say, hey, here's the situation. And he said, hey, let me see what I can find out. He puts me in contact with Buck Sanders, who I knew nothing about at the time. Buck asked me for a couple of samples, send the samples. They hired me part-time just to do two or three stories a week. I end up getting a job at Dick's Sporting Goods that end up paying the bills for a long time. You know, worked for Inside Carolina. And then Miller, they were kind of expanding or whatever with Miller's department because he's working still with the Insiders, which eventually, as I said, became scout.com. And he hired me full-time, but I still worked for Inside Carolina. Along the way, I eventually became full-time with Inside Carolina and gave up the scout.com duties just because Inside Carolina had a lot more work for me to do. Even though I think a lot of NC State fans think they try to get me fired or whatever, that there was, I don't even know where that came from. There's no truth to that whatsoever. So anyway, so that's kind of how I started. So I think it was my senior year of college is when I went full time with, or no, I'm sorry. Actually, no, it was after I graduated when I went full time with Miller while I was a senior in college. And then about a year after I graduated, I went full time with Inside Carolina.
So Cole's loss was Inside Carolina's gain.
That's right. I was the best truck unloader they had.
But they fired you. So I'm officially putting it out to our subscribers. This is our Cole's protest.
Okay. Yeah, let's boycott Cole's because they fired me 20 years ago.
they're gonna be like, why are our sales tanking?
The
Don't
funny
fire
thing
scoops and get away with it.
The funny thing is so I was fired because I knew pretty quickly I did not want to do retail. So I was the type that I hate to admit this now because I guess I have a pretty comfortable job now. So Buck's not going to get too upset, but arrive late, try to leave as early as possible sort of thing. All that sort of stuff. And I remember when I actually overslept. It was an honest oversleep, but all the other times weren't. And so when I went into the manager's office, someone else had to report it that I was late or whatever. And she said, the person at corporate told her, you know, we should have fired this guy a long time ago. So
that's never a good message.
No.
So for the superlatives, the only guidelines I have are that this is only about commits that committed to UNC, mm-hmm. and it's superlatives from the time of the commitment, from the time that you were covering, not how they, I guess, progressed at UNC, unless it's unless we state otherwise. But the first question I have for you is, who was the first commit you remember covering?
So Mike Mason's answer, but let me give a quick caveat. I'm so glad Taylor gave me this list ahead of time because I have such a bad memory. But it was actually fun last night kind of looking through the commitment list, looking through some of the notes to kind of answer some of these. But yeah, Mike Mason was the first one I remember. And I think he had committed around the time that I start working on the beat. But him and I became pretty close friends because he committed so early. And he was one of the first commits of that class. But wide receiver who I think played some at North Carolina, but didn't amount to much, but was like a 4-star wide receiver, I believe.
And then we've seen it on the basketball threads, the Kerwin Walton, the Harrison Barnes, the ones that really kind of take over the board. Mm-hmm. Who would you say the message board was the most hyped about, centered around a football recruit or football commit?
Yeah, this one was probably the toughest for me. You know, I think about Zamir White a little bit. You know, the 5-star running back from Scotland County ended up at Georgia. I know he's not a UNC commit. But I mean, so there, I mean, right now, I mean, it's like Concepcion, KC is kind of the name that everyone's talking about a bunch because, you know, he's committing. I mean, basketball, I think, and football recruiting are just so different in that, you know, basketball, what you're signing like 2-3 guys a class and yeah. Football recruiting, you're starting 25. So it's a little bit harder to kind of get stuck on just one guy.
Yeah. Yeah. The Walton one for basketball, it's like, you'll be on like page 10 and go out to like a lunch break and you come back and they're on page like 35.
Well, that happens with a lot of posts on Inside Carolina. I mean, even the weekly scoop, I mean, a lot of people will be like, hey, didn't you respond to my post on page 9? I'm like, dude, after page 3, I just kind of accept that that's probably have gone off in some other direction that I don't want to mess with, to be honest.
The subscribers on Inside Carolina, the premium stuff really make it worth it because, like, sometimes I'll like, want to learn something about, like, another team. Mm-hmm. So I'll go to, like, their board and then, like, you'll see posts on like the front page where it's like the most recent thing is like a week ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't even imagine this for Inside Carolina.
Yeah. I hear all the time from other, like the national writers who they come to our board and they're like, oh my God, it's like, you know, it's like the ATL airport, basically the way, you know, Inside Carolina is. And yeah, I mean, there are a lot of websites where you go to their message boards and it's, you know, echoes
the tumbleweed
yes is yeah.
Who would you say the best communicator was for a commit, where it's like if you want to get a story, they're going to reach out to you really quick? If you want to get a scoop, they're going to be really helpful.
So I had a bunch. Now keep in mind, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, so my list, Eric Ebron, Michael Carter, William Sweet, and Austin Prohl. All those guys, and there's a bunch of others. I'm sure I'm forgetting some, because there's been a bunch through the years who – Ra-Ra Dibworth, another one I need to put on there, who, you know, if I needed to know kind of what was going on, I give them a call. They usually answer or they get back to me really quickly. They give me some of the inside stuff. Eric was great because we also did, like, a journal with him, like a recruit journal with him, and he's just a great personality. You know, and some of the stuff I had to, you know, some of the stuff he was, the crazy stuff he would say, I'd have to kind of tame a little bit. But yeah, he was a lot of fun. Austin Prohl was great, you know, as far as like just understanding, you know, football and understanding, you know, just the coaching atmosphere. Michael Carter, everybody knows, you know, because he's more recent, just the type of personality he is. I saw a video with him. You know, you did something on Michael Carr. So, you know, I mean, just unbelievable personality. And he was really good about being involved with recruiting. And if I wanted to know, okay, what's the deal with what's going on here? He would give me a good idea. Same thing with William Sweet, you know, very personable kid, you know, would give me whatever I needed. Anytime I needed anything, I would hit him up and he'd get back to me. There's been a bunch through the years, and I'm sure I'm forgetting about a lot. Ra-Ra was great, and he was during that class, that 2021 class, which was during the COVID year. And so it was a little bit harder to get information because I couldn't rely on going to camps or going to high schools to talk to high school coaches, talk to recruits, talk to parents. So I had to really rely on the recruits. And he was one of the ones that I leaned on a lot.
The opposite end of that spectrum, who was the worst communicator where you're trying to do a story and you're not hearing anything? It's crickets. Yeah.
So there's been a few, but the one that really stuck out to me, and I mean, it's kind of an unfair selection, but Junior Nkande. Do you remember Junior Nkande?
Yeah. Me and Junior were teammates for 3 years, I think.
Yeah. So I don't feel as bad about picking this because I saw they did a video and it kind of used his, he has a very thick accent, and that's the issue here. And they use his thick accent as a joke in the video. So it sounds like he has fun with it, but yeah, I can remember, thankfully. So I think he was adopted or something from the athletic director at his like a little school in Georgia. And that guy was awesome to deal with because he actually flipped at the very end, or no, Georgia Tech dropped him at the right before signing, like a few weeks before signing, or maybe the week of signing day. And North Carolina, you know, scooped him up immediately. And his athletic director, who he lived with, was awesome to deal with. So he would put me on the phone with Junior, and I would never use any of the quotes because his accent is just really, really thick and really, really difficult to understand.
So how are you coming up with stories?
His athletic director.
It was strictly athletic director.
Yeah.
Through a third-party translator. Yeah. The next question, it's almost like asking to choose a favorite kid, I would have to imagine, for a parent. But who's the favorite parent that you've gotten to know?
So this is another one that could actually get me in trouble because a lot of these parents still listen to the podcast, even if their kids have long left North Carolina.
And a lot of them think they're the favorites?
Potentially.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick one, I would go with Dion Glover. You know, everyone knows Dion because he's been a guest on a lot of these different podcasts. He's Tony Grimes' dad. But, you know, Tony Grimes' recruitment was so just a lot of twists and turns throughout. And Dion told me, he's like, hey, you know, reach out to me once a week. Let's just keep the line of communication open, which was awesome, which I don't think I've ever had a parent or a recruit do. So we would talk once a week, and it wouldn't only be about Tony. You know, Dion's very involved in that community there. So he would give me names of guys. Cause I mean, at that time, you know, Tyon Holloway and Tyshawn Chapman weren't big names, but he would tell me about those guys and give me information on those guys, which was great. And I still talk to, not every week, but I still talk to Dion, you know, every couple of weeks. Just a couple of honorable mention, Javari Ritzy's mom, absolutely awesome. You know, Ritzy had his announcement in his backyard, so I had to work with her a lot, and she's great. Andre Green's dad, who's been a guest on our podcast, was always awesome. I didn't speak to him weekly, but we spoke a lot. And Andre's recruitment was, if you guys remember last year, was very intense with a lot of stuff that was going on, particularly that last week before he actually announced, he took the official visit to Clemson. His dad made himself available to give me quotes, which was awesome. We had tremendous coverage of Andre Green Jr. And that was because of Andre Green Sr. Duke Howe, Sam Howe's dad, was awesome. You know, fortunately for me, when a lot of things went down in North Carolina with Mac Brown being hired and then Phil Longo being hired, it happened. A lot of stuff happened during Shrine Bowl week. So I was down in Spartanburg with Sam and his dad. Obviously Sam had a lot of practices, but you know, his dad was there and we would talk a bunch, and he was really insightful. He's another one who's good about giving names about, you know, with kids who are also in the area, particularly the Charlotte area. Brent Renner's dad was awesome. You know, this was before the time of Huddle, and his dad would send me Brent's highlights every week, video highlights. And this might sound like, oh, no big deal now, but back then,
when it was tough.
Yeah, it was difficult. You had to have the high school. Most high schools didn't have that technology. I think that was still at the point where I was still receiving VHS, and this guy sent me digital stuff, which was awesome. Mike Switzer, Ryan Switzer's dad, you know, another guy who, you know, Ryan wasn't really big on the recruiting process. So Mr. Switzer was awesome with helping me out. And he's also a photographer. So we've crossed paths a bunch, just him shooting different events and me being at those events. And also want to mention Jake Lawler's parents. Both of them are UNC alums. They were tremendous. I know that they're big podcast listeners. So if they're listening, hello, Michelle. but they were great. So that's my list. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone.
It's a good list.
I apologize if I did.
Yeah.
What's that?
It's a great list.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would you say the best recruiter was once they committed, doing their best job at getting others to commit and getting others on board at Carolina?
So I'm sure there probably were better recruiters, because some of them do it kind of in the shadows. But what I remember most was Michael Carter and Jake Lawler's class. Mike and Lawler almost kind of competed to land recruits. And we talked about early about Mike, you know, just on social media, and just, you know, how he's just such a fun personality to talk to. And Jake's a really chill kid who explains things really well and was really good with recruiting also. So I think that duo for that class, I can't remember what class that was, but I would single those guys out.
Do you remember who was doing a better job at getting it was the 2017 class?
Okay. Maybe Carter, but I mean, you know, I have an awful memory. Yeah,
that class, just for the people listening, it was Melton, Lawler, Cotman, Trayshaw, Cawthon, Ross, Gill, Carter, Riley, Branch, Caleb Rosar, Jordan Tucker. For context for people listening, the 2017 class, who would you say was the best highlight tape? Like, sports, a lot of times when you think of the highlight tape, like, some people are synonymous with having great highlight tapes. Tavon Austin, basketball, Seventh Woods. Who was the best commit highlight tape that you saw?
The one that pops out my head, TJ Logan. And I mean, he had a song made about him.
Yeah.
You know, just tons of just really long runs. I mean, just one at the other, at the other, at the other, you know, spins, leaps, you know, all that sort of stuff. Ryan Switzer, I think you got to also mention his, very similar as far as just, you know, what he's doing out there. And then he obviously, you know, proved it on the NFL level until recently as a return man. Those would be my two selections for the highlight tape.
Yeah, those guys, it's like they're obviously going to have good highlight tapes, because mm-hmm. you look at their stats and mm-hmm. like a one game stat is some people's season. Like,
yeah.
TJ Logan, 7-8 touchdowns in a playoff yeah. game. He's obviously going to have a great tape. I'm going to have to go back and watch those tapes. How about when you're on the road, who was the best commit that you remember watching live?
So I'm going to go with Elijah Hood. Mostly because I feel like on tape, his speed is, this tape doesn't do his speed justice. But I can remember multiple times where I'm on the sidelines and he made a cut. And actually, it was on the sidelines. This is right after he had decommitted from Notre Dame. And there was all these rumblings about North Carolina, because I think before he had committed to Notre Dame, North Carolina, it was down North Carolina and Notre Dame. And I think maybe Alabama came in later with the roll toilet paper thing.
The best quote for anybody who doesn't know what Don's talking about. We talked about it in football all the time. There's a video of Elijah Hood that he posted flushing an Alabama letter down a toilet, going, "Roll toilet."
Yeah. So, but yeah, so during that time, there was a game. I believe Charlotte Catholic had a game on a Saturday. Robert Dinkins, who was committed to North Carolina, Kaysen Collins, also committed to North Carolina. They came to the game. They were on the sidelines with me. And I remember he made a cut and just blew down the sideline in front of me. And it just, you heard his feet, but you also just heard the wind. You know, and it was just like, it was almost like when a like a a truck blows past you when you're standing on the street. Like, it was like that, like just how fast he was. And I can't remember which one, if it was Dinkins or if it was Kaysen Collins, said, that's our running back, you know, because, I mean, he is just unreal. And you really had to, because I don't think people realize just how fast he truly was. Yeah. I mean, and you know, at one of the Nike camps, he ran like the fifth fastest time out of like 500 kids. And these weren't like slouches. This is back when the Nike camps attracted the best of the best. And he was the fifth fastest there and weighed at that time, what, I don't know, 220, whatever it was. So it was amazing.
Yeah, that 2015 season was something special watching him work. And he was so good that TJ Logan kind of took like almost a secondary role when you think of North Carolina having two NFL caliber type backs in the same backfield. Who would get the superlative for biggest commit size-wise? I feel like nowadays these kids are getting bigger and bigger, but do you have one in mind where it's like, This is the biggest human being I've ever seen committed to UNC?
So I try to find, and I guess I got sidetracked when I was looking for it. Calvin Bryant was a huge human being. And I think he was in the 6'7" range, 300 something plus. But I think the thing I remember most was he had this massive head. And I do remember in press conferences, because I can't remember who was, I guess it was Butch Davis maybe. Was talking about how they had to order him a special helmet because his head was so big. So I need to look that up. But really, more recently, you know, Trayvon Green, who just signed with North Carolina, who actually, some people are telling me how good he's looked in practice. You know, on his profile, his high school profile, he's listed at like 6'8", 330 something. But I can remember he would always say 340. And then he went to some camp and it was like 360. And there was a point where he was like over 400 pounds. So this is a massive human being. Great kid. Great interview. But yeah, I mean, he was a massive human being, or is still. I know he's trimmed down a bunch. And his story with how he lost all that weight is a great story also.
Yeah. Go Heels has him listed at 6'7¾". 345 pounds.
Yeah.
That's one where I almost need the visual of me standing next to him, like a Aaron Judge, Jose Altuve pitcher.
Yeah.
I need to go to a practice, get a pitcher next to him, be the butt of everybody's jokes of him being like almost a foot taller than me. What about, again, the opposite end? Who's the smallest commit that you can remember Carolina bringing in?
So, yeah, this is another one where we went down the list. I was kind of looking, and the smallest I could find, and he's not going to like this, is Ryan Switzer. And it's definitely, if those who know Ryan know, that's a sore point for him. But yeah, I mean, and it didn't matter. He worked super hard. He made it to the NFL and played however many years it was in the NFL at multiple teams, returner, receiver. So yeah, but he was the smallest.
I think that almost plays into his hand, where he had such a big chip on his shoulder, and it was always like
the
hard over height type storyline. So I don't know if he would be that mad that you said he was the smallest, especially when you look at the numbers he put up and the records he kind of set while he was at Carolina. Who would you say the fastest commit is? Line them all up. Who's winning a 100-meter dash?
So these guys actually participated in a track meet together. Kedrick Davis and Romar Morris. Morris actually got hurt on that race. Kedrick won that race. Kedrick's time was something ridiculous. It was, I mean, the time I remember in my head, I feel like is probably wrong, so I don't want to say it, but it was ridiculous times. Now, Kedrick never really amounted to anything at UNC, but he definitely had some speed. Romar Morris had a better UNC career, but you know, he definitely had some speed too, because he won, I think, the prior year that I attended that 100 meter dash track meet.
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Romar was on the track team at UNC. Like, they brought him over for spring, and I'm pretty sure they brought Kedrick too. It was like Kedrick, Romar, Damian Washington, I think they brought over.
Mm-hmm. He's another track kid, yeah.
And I think Roy Smith too. But Roy was more like 400-meter hurdles. But those guys, those were some of the fast.
And I think Roy came to UNC as a track guy and was added to the team later.
Okay. That was that Butch working around the numbers?
Well, I think it ended up burning them because there was something – it wasn't working on the numbers. They added him later on, but I think they ended up using
I think that was by Fedora. Maybe it was Fedora year.
It could have been Fedora, yeah.
Where it was like if he's on track scholarship and plays football, then he has to be football scholarship.
Where they got hurt by was the initial counter thing. So they ended up losing an initial counter for the next year because they played him. But anyway, that's another rabbit hole.
Who would you say the strongest arm for a quarterback you've ever seen from a UNC commit? Who's slinging it?
Does it have to be a college quarterback? Because no. I have a great name. Okay, good. AJ Blue.
Oh, wow.
I went to a bunch of AJ Blue's high school games. He was a quarterback, did not play running back in high school, and he was a really good quarterback, and he could absolutely sling it. I mean, the velocity was there. I think the problem was he didn't know how to take anything off of it, among other things.
Only but, one speed.
Yeah, only one speed, you know, 1,000 miles per hour, you know, tremendous RPMs, beautiful ball. It's going through your chest, though, you know. But, yeah, so he definitely, seeing him throw it with the ball, he threw it hard.
I remember times after practice when I was on the team with Blue where – he would be like past midfield and like all the quarterbacks would do the thing where they're trying to hit like the uprights,
mm-hmm.
and Blue would be out there like doing it with them, hitting it just as much as them. So it's kind of funny to hear like a school that recently, you know, Bryn, Queese, Mitch Trubisky, Sam Howell, and for who has the best arm, you're going AJ Blue.
Well, I'm going strongest arm.
Strongest arm. Who would you say the most intense commitment was?
So this one was tough for me. I had a bunch of names. From, you know, Ravo Hasek was really cool with me. But I've seen situations, you know, I knew your question was when there were recruits, but he was at a JUCO school up in, I can't remember where it was. So I never was able to cross paths with him at his JUCO school, but when I've seen him at UNC's practice, he's pretty intense. This is an old name, Ryan Taylor. He ended up playing in the league for a long time. I think mostly as a special teams guy, super intense human being, great size, great athleticism. He played a little bit tight end. He kind of bounced around different positions. I think no one ever was able to find a great position for him, but he was great on special teams, but he was super duper intense. Tommy Hatton, another one who was super intense. He's another one who I could, communicator wise, I could have thrown him up there. Tyler Powell was pretty intense too. You know, I went to one of his practices and the day prior he got suspended because he got into a fight because of his intensity. So I wasn't able to, well, I was able to speak with him, but I had to go to his house to talk to him, which was an interesting situation. You want a story for one?
Yeah. I always want a story.
All right. Mitch Trubisky.
Wow.
So I don't want to give too much details. I was playing a video game against RJ Prince. All right. And I was NCAA football. I was whacking RJ Prince. And I was killing his quarterback, and I was talking trash, saying how he had a bunch of RJ Princes on his offensive line. That's why his quarterback was always on his back. So Mitch is like, I'll play you. And it was just like, okay. So we get on. We don't talk at all. And it is so intense. It was 14-14. And then he got a call. He had to go. And so we were never able to finish that game. But it was probably the most intense video game I've ever been a part of. I can't remember the details. I think there was an interception in there somewhere that kind of tied it up. But it was just a very intense experience for me, and it was over a video game.
It's like that meme where the guy's playing video games, and then he's starting to lean in a little more when he starts locking in. Who would you say the most competitive high school competition that you've seen from a commit? Because I think it varies in levels, where it's like you go to some games and you're like, oh, this guy's just running through some easy competition. Who would you say you went to the games and it's like the competition this guy's playing at and what he's doing, it's impressive.
Yeah, so I always feel like the Atlanta area, particularly that, I guess, Northeast, but definitely the greater Atlanta area, is the most competitive. You go to those schools and, like, you're talking about a dozen plus Power Five recruits on most of those rosters. So because of that, and because he played at, you know, in that Northeast area at North Gwinnett, you know, have to go with Josh Downs. I mean, he played against great competition. And I think the fact that he was able to, you know, he was so ready coming out of high school. I know he didn't play as a true freshman, mostly because of who was ahead of him. But, I mean, he was able to step in as a true sophomore. I think he was a true sophomore.
Yeah.
And without any sort of problems, it was like he's been playing forever. And it's because of who he played against while he was in high school.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Yeah, Downs, the numbers he put up last year, it's like maybe he could have contributed as a freshman. I've always been of the opinion, like, it's really hard for true freshmen to kind of break into college football, but I think you're seeing it more and more now, where it's like Antoine Green goes down and all of a sudden Andre Green, it's like people are expecting him to kind of speed up when he'll be ready, if this Carolina team is going to compete like people think they will. Who would you say the best athlete, like, slash, like, most dynamic was?
Mike Hughes was, his senior season, he literally put New Bern High School on his back. I believe they went undefeated in the top classification in North Carolina and won a state championship. And, you know, his high school football coach said it best, where he said, I don't think Mike can ski, but if I gave him skis and gave him a week, he'd become the best skier you've ever met.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. And so he, I mean, you know, he never played DB in high school other than in camps, and became a great DB. And it's unfortunate what happened to him at North Carolina, because I think he would have been a great North Carolina player. But, you know, he went on to the NFL. Yeah. I mean, he's just one of those guys that just has that athletic gene and just can do whatever.
Who had the best hands? Who's got the stickiest hands?
Best hands. Now, this might be a recency bias. I'm sure I'm probably forgetting someone, but went with Andre Green. You know, he's another one where if you put on his highlights, pretty impressive. His ball skills are ridiculous. Now, if I could throw a name out there, just as a little cheat here, you know, my guy, Jordan Shipp. No, he's just was offered, not committed, but love his hands. You were there at his practice. Love that dude's hands. But anyway, Andre Green, just, you know, throwing his tape, just makes unbelievable catches, whether it's an interception or, you know, I mean, he didn't have the best quarterback throwing to him, and they just throw it up, and he just had tremendous hands.
Yeah, I love the squeeze of the Jordan Shipp reference for it's like a little scoop.
Yeah.
Scoop for the people. I'm super high on Jordan Shipp too. I think we both are a lot higher on somebody like Jordan Shipp than maybe others are.
Yeah.
Who would you say the earliest commitment is that you can remember?
So I actually went, this is another one where I kind of went through the lists, and it was close. Dontavius Nash committed on June 16th before his junior season. Robert Dinkins committed on June 18th before his junior season. So those were the two earliest. Nash kind of looking, you know, UNC had offered him, a year prior. Looking back, it kind of made sense because as a sophomore, he had attended almost all of UNC's home games, which is pretty unprecedented. You know, not a lot of sophomores are visiting games, and if they do, they kind of spread it out to a bunch of different schools, which makes the most sense. But clearly, UNC was on that kid's mind, and he committed, I think it was during like the Showtime camp. I think it was Showtime camp at the time. So it had to be Showtime camp because it was to Mac Brown.
Yeah, that's a trip from Gastonia every Saturday for.
And he had other offers, so he could have gone to a lot of other places, and he did. But I remember looking back, and it was like almost every UNC home game he attended.
Now there's times where players are silent commits.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the worst kept secret commit in your opinion?
You skipped one.
Oh, who was the biggest surprise commitment?
So the biggest surprise, this is going back to a not so great time. Greg Little. Reason why I say it, so he was committed to Notre Dame for a long time, and we had our signing day plans all kind of mapped out. I can't remember where I was going, that we had people going all these other places. Then we started to receive word that Greg Little might not actually sign with Notre Dame, might flip to North Carolina on signing day. So fortunately, JB Sissel was available. And fortunately, you know, Greg Little went to school at Hillside in Durham, which is, 20 minutes away. And so JB was able to go over there and cover it. But that was something that we weren't expecting. But that was also during a coaching transition, and a lot of unexpected things happened because things happen so quickly during those times. But that was the most unexpected one for me.
I'm going to get on my my old man yells at the clouds.
Okay. I like it.
This old signing days, I miss signing days mattering. Signing days don't matter anymore.
I agree. You're right. No, I agree. The way that they've done it now, it's not nearly as fun.
Yeah.
You know,
peeling back the curtain a bit, like, has there ever been a time where you're out and like a recruit's commitment completely catches you off guard? Like maybe, you know, you're out to dinner and all of a sudden your phone starts blowing up. Has that ever happened to you?
So nowadays, I mean, I'm talking about in the last probably 10 years or so, it really doesn't happen that much. I mean, maybe like when like Elijah Green, when he committed, you know, that was somewhat surprising, I guess. So I guess that they kind of throw it in there, but for the most part, we have a good idea. I mean, these kids are either setting up a time or, you know, you have such a good rapport with the kid, you have an idea of when they might be doing things. You know, I have reliable sources who will reach out to me and kind of give me heads up on certain things. But you know, I mean, social media has changed it tremendously to where it's hard to really surprise people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Zach Rice tried to do it and he was fairly successful, but I mean, you knew it was either going to be North Carolina or Virginia with him, but he kept it only between him and his mom and maybe his coach. Maybe there's a couple other people, but was very, very selective with who he told. One of the mistakes recruits make is, and this is out of respect, but they tell the schools who didn't pick them and who they're not going to pick. I'm sorry. Those are the schools most likely to not, most likely to leak the information because they kind of went out there. But Zach didn't tell anybody. So, I mean, nowadays it's just so hard, but yeah, I mean, you know, I guess prior to Twitter being a big deal, there were definitely a lot that kind of happened because it was just a different time.
Yeah. I don't think people understand how on we have to be sometimes.
Yeah.
There was one time early this spring, UNC basketball player was announcing that he was coming back, and I knew almost to like the minute when he was going to announce. And I think I was on like some kind of vacation, and like people wanted to like go do things, and I was like, I can't do anything until after this time and after this player announces he's back. And then once he kind of announced and I got everything out, then I was able to do things.
But, well, that's and that's where it really has become to the point where it's like a kid's going to announce at such and such time. So I'm sitting there staring at my computer, waiting for him. Now, the last few kids have been great. They tweeted exactly when. But then there's some guys who, like, 15 minutes go by, nothing happens. They don't realize that's the longest 15 minutes where I'm just staring at my computer screen. Yeah. But I will say that before, you know, things became the way they are now with social media. I mean, yeah, I would not leave. Like, there were now I don't leave the house without my keys, my cell phone, or my wallet. Before, it used to be my keys, my cell phone, my wallet, and my recorder so I can, you know, interview. So it's always kind of weird. People say, you know, you pull it out of your pocket, like, what is that? You know, sort of thing, especially like, you know, 20 years ago. I mean, they were huge, you know.
Going back to the silent commitments now, who was the worst kept secret commitment?
So I'll go with Michael Carter, only because he actually committed at Fedora's Freak Show and some people put it out there. And then he went to everyone and said, hey, can you guys not say anything because I want to announce it at my family's 4th of July party. And so some people had to retract and delete and all that. And so, but by that point the cat was already left out of the bag. And I think, you know, it's probably like 2 weeks between then and the 4th of July. I'm sure there's plenty of others where it became pretty clear who it was going to be early on, but that was the one where it was just obvious. Unfortunately, you know, everyone liked Michael Carter. Everyone likes Michael Carter. So, you know, media members who sometimes can be a little stubborn, they were more than willing to kind of help him out and, you know, retract their reports.
Who was the commit that was the furthest away from Chapel Hill?
Well, I mean, you have Don Chapman, who, you know, the East Coast. But I could tell you, if you like stories. So I actually went to cover Arthur Brown. And this is during Butch Davis, which is in Wichita, Kansas. And he ended up picking Miami. So it wasn't UNC commit, but I did go all the way out to Wichita, Kansas to cover his announcement that he didn't choose UNC.
That is a good one.
I'm
imagining a video series, Don in Wichita.
Yeah, no, it was definitely that. And so Kansas was a unique experience, but the one that like stands out more was Melvin Williams, who's even further back, was a JUCO DB from Coffeyville, Kansas, or Coffeyville Junior College. I went out there to do just a story on him. He was already committed. He went to North Carolina, played a couple seasons. But I remember the closest airport, I think, was Tulsa or something like that. And I couldn't get a flight during that range, so I had to fly into Kansas City and drive 3 hours to Coffeyville. And that was, in all honesty, kind of a cool experience. Not something I'm going to do again, but definitely like you check off your list, because, you know, they say how flat Kansas is, but I didn't really appreciate how flat it was until I'm out there driving for 3 hours and you look out your window and you don't see anything for miles. So that was kind of a far one that I covered also, but I didn't go all the way out to California for Don Chapman.
Who's the hometown hero? Who's the closest to Chapel Hill?
That one was difficult. I mean, cause you have a bunch of guys in Durham.
Yeah.
You have, Jarrett McAdoo, who's from Chapel Hill High School. I guess you would go with him, probably walking distance. So he probably would be the closest.
Who would you say had the most hype coming in? Like the first day on campus, who had the most hype from a commit that you remember?
So this is another dark period in Carolina. Was, you know, Marvin Austin. You know, at one point he was number one player in the nation. I don't think he finished number one, but he was up there pretty high and had just a ton of hype and a ton of other things that came with him to Chapel Hill.
That's, we pour one out from from Marvin Austin. Yeah. Marvin Austin on Twitter. Who would you say had the this is one of somebody that didn't go to UNC. So who, in your opinion, the one that got away?
So I'm asked this question a lot, and it's, I feel like it's so difficult to answer because, you know, unlike basketball recruiting, UNC is probably offering in every class over 100 guys. So, and some of it is like you offer guys, the best players in your region. And if they say thanks and you never hear from them again, no big deal. But if they say thanks, I'm going to visit your campus, great. And maybe something comes of it. So it's so hard to justify, okay, was UNC really involved? I mean, I put down Arthur Brown, who I talked about. I mean, he was at one point the number one player in the nation. And UNC was a finalist with Miami. I mean, it was so close to getting – UNC was so close to getting him that, you know, Inside Carolina flew me out there to cover it. And then also you got guys like, you know, Dexter Lawrence who was, I feel like, one of the best players to come out of the state of North Carolina, ended up at Clemson. UNC fell off before the final stretch, but he had visited there a bunch of times. So they were a factor early on, but he was one of the best the state has produced.
Yeah. I had on my notes, the ones that got away, I just wrote down Georgia running backs. So Todd Gurley, Zamir White.
Yeah, yeah.
Georgia,
no,
Georgia,
I mean,
stop poaching.
Yeah, and Todd Gurley is a great example because I had a really good relationship with Todd, and he basically at multiple points told me he was headed to North Carolina. That was during the coaching transition, and I think the coaching transition paired with Georgia just recruiting really well just made it not happen.
I also sneakily have a good relationship with Todd Gurley.
Okay.
He would come back and visit because he was close with a lot of guys in that class. And this was probably when he was getting ready for the NFL draft. And I didn't know him when he came back. But at one point it was me, him, and like two other guys on the UNC team that he was closer with. And we went out to some bar on Franklin Street, and the two guys that knew him like went off to like go talk to like their girlfriends or left with their girlfriends. So it was just me and Todd Gurley at a bar in Chapel Hill. First time ever meeting him. We're like casually talking, and he essentially just asked me to be his wingman for the night. He would just like look for somebody. He would like look for a girl and be like, go up to that girl and be like, hey, is that Todd Gurley? And that's what I did for the entire night. That was probably like sophomore year when
it's funny.
I can visit. Who would you say the diamond in the rough was for you're evaluating all these prospects who wasn't getting the proper recognition? You were like, I think this guy's a lot better than his recruiting or his ranking is saying.
So if we go recency bias, Javonte Williams is the pick here because you look at his offers, you look at his ranking and all that sort of stuff, and you look at what he's doing now. He's the pick. But a couple names I want to throw out there. Bruce Carter wasn't highly recruited. I think his two offers were North Carolina and East Carolina, and he ended up playing in the NFL, becoming a multi-year starter, one of the best linebackers North Carolina has produced. Hakeem Nicks. Yeah, this is very early on in my career. So I don't remember him having any other offers besides North Carolina. Most of that was because he was playing on a loaded Charlotte Independence team. This is for those way back. Remember, Independence High School was the team in Charlotte for a while there with Chris League, Mohamed Massaqua, Joe Cox, so on and so forth. Hakeem Nicks is one of those guys. And he was one of those guys who had to wait his turn and didn't play until his senior year. And John Bunning offered him based off of a recommendation from the coach there, and then also seeing him in some in camp settings. But unbelievable player, Super Bowl champion, played for the Giants for a long time, was an unbelievable player in North Carolina. And really, unless my memory is wrong, North Carolina was the only school that offered him.
Look at you throwing around your bona fides, man. You're high on Javonte Williams and Hakeem Nicks.
No, that I was high on. No. I was not high on. Well, I was high on Knicks. I thought this was more of like guys who diamonds in the rough beat the
oh, no.
Oh, you're talking about mine. Oh,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Who are you looking at? Like, I was going to say Javonte Williams and Hakeem Nicks. Like,
no,
NFL
no, no.
team is going to listen to this and offer you a job in scouting.
No. I mean, I definitely did not know about Javonte or knew very little about Javonte Williams before he committed to North Carolina. And the same thing with all those. Those are just guys who the rankings and the other people didn't think highly of.
Okay.
As far as my own personal guys who I thought higher than everyone else, I mean, I can't think of any off the top of my head. So I guess those NFL scouts are not going to hire me now.
And then the next superlative I have is the it factor. Like when you're at Providence Day, one of the reasons we were talking about like why we love Jordan Shipp so much, it's like you watch him play and you're like, whatever talent it takes to like play at the next level, it takes something else. And like somebody like that, it feels like they have the it factor. Who would you say was the biggest it factor commitment that you can remember?
I would have to go Sam Howell. And I'm sure there's other ones I can probably point to, but you know what, I guess for me sums it up best. I had a conversation with Fedora during a camp that Sam was at, and Fedora kind of, he said, look, I mean, this guy, he just wills his way to whatever he wants to do. And, you know, because if you look at him, he's not the tallest. He's not the fastest. He doesn't have the best arm. He doesn't have this and that, but he produces and he wins games. You know, if you look at him, if you watch him just run, you wouldn't think this, he's like this great mobile quarterback, but he actually is. He's very dangerous with the ball in his hands running. Same thing with his throwing. I mean, he's not, you know, there's certain things that he doesn't do great, but he just produces and he just has that it factor. He also is just, you kind of see it when you're talking to him. He's kind of no nonsense. Nothing bothers him. Just very, you know, he's another one you could probably throw in the intense category also.
Yeah, there's a reason why Carolina went from a two-win team the season before him to
as a true freshman
to an Orange Bowl appearance by his sophomore year.
Yeah,
they had.
And
I'm
not trying to dog him. I'm just trying to say, like, there's nothing you would point to and say he's really good with this.
Yeah,
but he's really good.
Yeah, it's the intangibles almost.
Yeah, exactly.
Making up for. Who would you have as the best overall class? Like, are you going Butch days? Or are you going one of the Mac Brown classes? Who is the best class?
So, I mean, from a ranking standpoint, I think the 2009 Butch Davis class.
Everything goes back to 2009.
was the best one. But, you know, we haven't, or the problem with the 2009 class is that a lot of busts in that class. For a lot of different reasons, whether it's academic or once they came on campus, they had some sort of problems or whatever it may be. But very close to that is the 2021 class, which is, you know, obviously Mac Brown's class. And, you know, we might see that class really kind of, sorry, my cat is going crazy.
We have to address the elephant in the room. It's the cat.
Yeah, I have a kitten, and he just, no matter what I do, I try to take him off the desk, but he keeps coming up. He just wants to be on camera.
This is why you can't just listen to the podcast as an audio-only medium. You have to watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I've been dodging cat ass for like the last 30 minutes. Anyway.
That's not a sentence I thought you would ever say.
Yeah. But yeah, so the 21 class, I'll go with that class just because it's not that far behind the 2009 class, but yet has the potential to actually be better in the long run.
And then the last one, who outperformed your expectations when they were coming in? You kind of mentioned Javonte Williams. Do you have other candidates for that?
So I didn't throw Javonte Williams mostly because I didn't have expectations for him because I knew very little about him. So the two that I went with were Jonathan Cooper, who loved the kid, awesome kid, but never expected him to be a top 10 NFL draft pick. Now he's kind of bounced around and never really kind of lived up to those expectations. But the fact that he became such a great college offensive lineman to the point where he became a top 10 NFL draft pick is pretty remarkable. Nothing that I ever projected, or I think anyone projected. The other name, TJ Yates. Now he's during my early years, I don't know the details, but it wasn't highly recruited. I don't think anyone realistically felt like he was going to be the quarterback for UNC during his years, and definitely didn't foresee a long NFL career, mostly as a backup, but still an NFL career. I mean, probably the best job in the NFL is the backup quarterback, right?
You latch on to one of those jobs.
Yeah.
You're set for life.
Yeah, if you could hold on to that, you'll be good.
Andy Dalton still in the league on the Saints.
Yeah.
He'll be on in the NFL for another 6-7 years, collecting millions of dollars.
Yep.
No pass attempts in the game. This question wasn't on the list, but how into the weeds are you getting with like walk-ons that commit to UNC? Because Carolina,
I mean, I'm talking to my favorite walk-on right now.
I appreciate it.
So I always do the meet the walk-ons story every July. And I've been doing it for, I don't know how long I've been doing it, but I was able to find Schottmer's version because I was able to kind of read it before he came on as a guest on the Scoop podcast with Ross Martin. So it depends. Now, specialists are a little bit different just because they're recruited differently. So if it's a big time specialist coming in as a preferred walk-on, obviously they're going to get a lot more coverage from me for obvious reasons, because they're the most likely to land a scholarship eventually. And then for the most part, just kind of, you know, if some kid tells me, hey, you know, I'm committed to North Carolina, they'll get a little blurb in the weekly scoop, but not a whole lot outside of the meet the walk-ons story that I do every year, which I do enjoy doing. It's a lot of research, and some of those walk-ons is very difficult to find information on, but I always enjoy doing it. And I enjoy even more looking back, see which guys kind of panned out, which didn't.
Yeah. And you're always going to get a couple of the guys that panned out: Schottmer, Cole Holcomb, Matt Collins.
Yeah.
Speaking of closing a loop, the parents that listen and the specialists, shout out to Chad Little.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chad Little listens, and this is his test to see if he's listening to this podcast. I want him to message me after listening to this podcast, if he's listening.
Yeah. Chad is awesome. He really is. I try to figure out a way to get Drew Little on one of these. I almost threw him in the intense category, but didn't. But no, Chad is great. I've known Chad well before his son was even a recruit. You know, he was Antonio Williams's coach. And, you know, for a little school, North Stanley has actually produced quite a few guys. So, and anytime I go there, the hospitality is off the charts with not just with Chad, but with all the coaches over there at North Stanley High School.
That's all we got on this podcast.
Now he's going to get mad at me for not including him on the parents thing.
We just gave him a 2-minute segment right there.
Yeah, we did. But he's probably going to, after the parents segment is over and his name's not mentioned, he's probably just going to stop listening.
That's all we have on this podcast. If we're evaluating how we did, I think this went well. I think this was a good audition for the future.
There was good chemistry here.
The scoop duo is on notice.
That's right. Ross better watch his back.
Everybody, appreciate you listening. Don, appreciate you getting on here. Till next time, talk to you guys later.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.